Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Our friends at iZotope have just made their portable recording solution, the Spire Studio, even better. And the best part is that you can try out the app and recording platform for Spire completely free. Download the iOS app for your phone or tablet today by following links in the description of this podcast, and make sketching down your song ideas incredibly easy and intuitive. Without the Spire, you won't have the mic or preamp, but you'll still have access to the software and effects that can polish your demo recordings more than you probably thought possible. The second generation Spire Studio ups the stakes by offering ultra low noise preamps that offer smooth, quieter recording and increased storage capacity. There's also Spire Pro, an optional subscription service accessed via the iOS app, and personalized soundcheck feature that listens and learns from your voice and environment. Check them out at iZotope.com. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Good evening, Mr. Joe Branton. How are you?
Good evening, Matt. I'm good. That's right. Ah, dear listener, damn it. I was asked not to say that's right or dear listener, but I couldn't think of anything else to say at that moment. But it's just going to be me and Matt this week, which is great.
The gruesome twosome.
Exactly. It's lovely to have you back on, Matt, after a couple of weeks.
I really feel like loads of stuff has happened and I've sort of been out of the loop. Like, I saw there was a bunch of Fender stuff, I think, that I sort of like glazed over and was like, oh, some stuff. And you guys in the chat at one point were talking about the new Ibanez, which we're going to talk about later.
Yeah.
And then I was just looking on the group because I know you posted about some questions, and then there was this I know we haven't got it in the agenda for today, Joe, but I just wanted to touch on this very quickly. Someone had posted the Clockwork Echo from J-Rocket, which is another delay pedal designed by Howard Davis, the designer of the original Deluxe Memory Man, who also designed the Supro Analog Delay and the X5 Analog Delay. And I kind of get the feeling that he's like going, how many more times could I reinvent the Deluxe Memory Man?
It looks cool though. This does look very much like a Memory Man sort of layout, you know, with the addition of the tap tempo. I remember seeing this briefly, and to be honest, I was annoyed that the cogs, the clockwork cogs, which are part of the artwork, weren't actual cogs.
It does look a bit like that. It was funny. I was playing around with delay pedals, as you do, and because I have got an original Deluxe Memory Man, which they are going for silly money. I mean, there's the 70s ones with the hardwired plugs, and then there's the 90s reissues with the plug-in.
And which one do you have?
So I have one of the 90s big box reissues, so the big sheet metal boxing, because obviously the more modern ones are the XO casing, you know, the more solid casing.
So the one you have, does that have a like a jack as the power cable? Is it that?
Yes, that's right. The 24-volt center pin positive, you know, ridiculous power supply that always, you know, would always get lost or break it, because they just shipped in those wooden boxes. They just shipped in a wooden box with barely any packaging in. And the amount that we used to see in when we were working in GAC in the early days, and just, it's broken, no power supply, whatever. And now, I mean, there's some sellers online, naming no names, who are definitely trying to, you know, push the price up of the demarket. You know, I think things are always worth what someone's willing to pay for them, but I've seen some go for like £700, £800, £900. I'm just like,
what?
I know, it's insane money. They all sound a bit different. They're all a bit quirky as well.
Why is that? Is it just there were no consistency of parts?
I think there's just very little consistency, even in the like 90s, 2000s. I think late 90s, 2000s, you know, little consistency, kind of quick build. And I think also the nature of some of the parts as well. So I've had mine serviced a couple of times and I love using it. It's a bit impractical in some ways. One, you don't want to step on the switch in case you break it. But two, there's like a volume drop and there's no trails, you know, all of the things you'd expect from like a modern delay, I guess. So I use mine with a little loop switcher box, and I was using mine with the tri-parallel mixer, and it's just so, I think the one thing that people struggle to capture is its musicality. You know, when you play a pedal and it's just, you know, you get good sounding pedals, and then you get pedals that just sound so engrossing, I guess. You play them and you're just like, songs, riffs, ideas, just like time just disappears as you play them. Like, you can play a good drive pedal and go, that's a great drive pedal, I will definitely plug that in again at some point. And then you get like other pedals where you're like, I can't not have this. And every time you go, I just want to try something different on my pedal board. And then you try it for a bit and then you go back to the other thing and you're like, no. And I just can't get rid of it. I wish I had three of them so I could put them on every board I had. And there are some great, you know, this one looks like I'd be keen to try it. Anything that's kind of Deluxe Memory Man vibe, I'm always willing to give a go. But yeah, I just feel like I've missed a lot, Joe, these last few weeks.
There have been a lot of things. Have you actually owned a 70s Music Man, just on before we...
Music Man guitar, or you mean Deluxe Memory Man? It's
Memory Man. Yes, sorry.
I actually owned a Memory Man, so not the deluxe one. And I sold it. It didn't sound as good as the deluxe because the deluxe has the modulation circuit in.
Right.
And I was like, I don't really need two. And yeah, it's the less desirable of the two. But it's... Deluxe Memory Man's definitely got a magical sound to it that not many people have kind of captured. The closest I've come recently, I've been messing around with a company called Screddy, who have been around for a long time, have a delay pedal, just the Screddy delay, which is actually digital and it's based on Echoplex, which is a different kind of delay circuit, but still very, very musical. You know, great sounding. Been playing the DM2W quite a lot. You know, that sounds really good.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't think that pedal can really be topped. I think the Boss DM2W.
Yeah, I think just for general sounds and delay, it's really good. I tell you what, I have been trying with that, which is we did talk about it on the podcast a long time ago, but the guys at Old Blood Noise sent me one, which is their Expressionator, I think. Is that what it's called or something? They're basically, it's two fixed expression points that you can then just quickly flick between, or you can modulate between. And that plugged into the delay rate of the DM2 is wicked, because you can go between a fast and a slow delay, or you can do it like with a, you know, an LFO, like automatically. So as you're playing, like the delay will like slowly speed up or slow down. So that's quite cool.
It's actually still kind of a cornerstone of Tim, the guitarist in my band's sound, the DM2W. And he has, I think it's called the Wingman or something. It was a Digitech. Basically the replacement knob, essentially. But it's got, you know, a big bit. I'm not describing that very well, listener, but you know, it's got a big...
It's like a giant nut for your
yeah,
for your pedal, right?
So you can move it with your foot, basically. And you know, and he can flick between, you know, long and short delay tones quickly and easily. And it's been something that he's used all the time on everything since the DM2W came out.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I've had one for a number of years. In fact, was Tim? No, maybe Tim. You remember when, before I worked at Roland, we did a Boss event at the old Artist Studios there, and a bunch of people brought down their boards and everyone got a DM2.
That's it. That was the point. That was when Tim got his DM2W. Yeah, so from then.
Yeah, that was a good day. And I got mine from then as well. It's wicked. But I tell you what is super interesting, actually, just while we finish on this topic of delays and ways to control expression, I need to give a shout out to this very small brand on Instagram based in Spain called El Garage, I guess. Garage. It's spelled EL_GARATGE.
El Garage,
basically, I think it is. So this person makes the expression knob, which is basically exactly what it sounds like. It's an expression pedal built into a normal, you know, Boss pedal knob, basically, that plugs into an expression pedal input. So it's a jack and then an L shape, and then on the top of the L shape is a knob, and you can just plug it into any pedal and then that controls your expression. And it's just really handy, you know, especially when you've got pedals that an expression pedal will control like multiple things at once, but you haven't got room for an expression pedal. It's just a really cool idea. The guy, I think, designed it, or person, should I say, designed it for Chase Bliss pedals. So you could have, because Chase Bliss pedals don't have like an expression knob on them. They all the knobs do something, obviously, as you move them around, but you can set an expression pedal to control multiple parameters at once. So he built it for that. And they're like, I think you have to message him on his Instagram, but they were like 25 euros.
What was the because I obviously spelt it wrong
at EL underscore GARATGE.
Musical
apparatus from Barcelona. He also, for any users,
great looking cat on his
indeed
Instagram.
For any users of the big Chase Bliss pedals, so the CXM78 or the Benson preamp, he also makes a magnetic detachable cover for the faders.
Reason I would never gig that pedal. Yes. And he solved it.
Yes. So I bought one off him. Really cool. Really, really cool.
Dan Pilver from Isotope was talking about getting something like this for his Chase Bliss as well.
Yeah, so I check him out. Great, great little brand. Just starting out. Looks really cool. So that's one worth checking out. And actually, Joe, we are off topic here in some ways, but talking of delay pedals and talking of Chase Bliss and flying faders, there's another new brand in town based in Portland. So a friend of the podcast, Blake, may know of these people. I think actually Andy, ex-Pro Guitar Shop Andy, posted a picture of these, this brand, Gecko Pedals, out of Portland. Have made the EP5 Geckoplex, which is a Echoplex replica. Yes.
I did see this.
Which is got some fantastic controls on it, what you'd expect, volume, repeats, tone, tap tempo. Or you can control the tempo with a slider that goes across the entire length of the pedal.
But the slider
is also a flying slider, which I think is very, very cool. So limited production. It's just one person making them in their garage, I think, at the moment. Building a bit of a following. But yeah, Gecko Pedals. Loads of Instagram. I'm digging Instagram for new brands.
They follow us. Gecko Pedals follow us. How about that?
Yes, I'm
going to give them a follow back.
I did mention I've been desperately trying to get one. He's like, I think I can ship to the UK. I'm not sure. And I'm like, let's work this out. Because I'm into big delay pedals. So,
of course.
There we go. That's my 20 minute or whatever time we're at rant on delay pedals.
That's good. Oh, God, I've missed you.
I know. I've missed talking on this podcast. But yeah, loads of stuff's been happening.
It has. It has. And despite, like, I do feel like the entire community's kicking off again. We're getting so many, like, new releases, loads of new pedals, loads of new guitars. We'll talk about a little bit about the news later. But as I said, we've also had some excellent questions on the Facebook group, Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. Dear listener, if you're not a part of it, join it. You know, a lot of you aren't a part of it because there's only like seven and a bit thousand people on it. So, you know, join it, dear listener. But you know what I've been doing over this time? Rediscovering the MS3. I hate to, you know, blow smoke up your bum, but yeah, it's a fantastic pedal. Obviously, like recently I kind of rediscovered the Helix whilst it's been locked down. I was like, yeah, this pedal's great. I do think it's easier to use than a GT1000. Like, the navigation's better. And I found it easier to make weird things. The GT1000 for me is like a fantastic straight up, like, here are some good tones if you want a good guitar tone. But for me, I'm like, what if I don't want a good guitar tone? The Helix is very good at, like, the Helix was good at that, like me being like, can I have four amps like all running into this one delay pedal which I'm then controlling with this? Like, it was great for easily making weird stuff. I know the GT1000 does it as well, just on the fly. It was great for that. So I built myself like a new sort of bunch of bass preamps. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna use this, I'm gonna commit this to Polymath, to my band. And I made myself, like, I was like, this is great because I really care about drive. And so I was like, yes, I'm going to shape my own special drive tone. And I was doing that by, you know, having things running in parallel, different drives running into different preamps and then linking back up and EQs after different ones. It made like a really complex sort of drive thing. I was like, yeah, this sounds great. And I took it to practice and I brought like a different bass because I'd just got a new bass. And of course, the drive tone's different. And then I was like, how on earth, what, like, where do I start in on the fly changing this tone, you know, from this drive patch I've built out of four drives and like a bunch of EQs and compressors and stuff? Like, where do I even start? And I realized then, I was like, as soon as I got back in a rehearsal space with my band, I was like, oh yeah, when you're actually gigging and you're not in your bedroom, you just need stuff to work and be sensible and functional. And so I built an MS3 board again with a few additional drives and stuff. And I had some cool boutique things on there. And I took that to the next practice. And I was like, oh, this is good. This is better. This is fine. But honestly, like, I got a new weird boutique drive and I was like, this sounded great in my bedroom, but actually, like, I'm losing quite a lot of low end. It's not really working for bass. I don't have anything to replace it on me, but it's really not working and we're going to be recording some stuff. I'll switch this patch out and change it for the built-in overdrive on the bass overdrive. There are like three of them, three options, I think, on the MS3 for bass overdrive, or maybe a couple more, but they're clean or mid boosts, I think, the other ones. But, you know, so I just changed it for the drive, which was essentially the what is it called? What's the yellow Boss?
ODB3.
So it's the MS3's version of that drive. And it sounded fantastic. Like, being able to just blend it in so it wasn't maybe quite as harsh. Of course, that pedal itself has a blend as well, but, you know, just being able to blend in a bass drive is always very useful. And I was like, this sounds absolutely brilliant. And I kind of came away from that practice being like, well, I've moved, like, all my vibrato tones are now from the MS3. My ring mod, which I use a lot, that's the MS3. The drive I prefer on the MS3 to any other things that I owned, and that included sort of things like the BB1X for me. I actually preferred the sound of the, you know, the BB1X is a great pedal, but I slightly preferred the sound of the built-in drive on the MS3. And I was at a point where I started taking apart my pedal board and putting it back together with the things I needed. And I've just ended up with loads of gaps that I can't fill because so much of it, I'm like, there is no point in me adding these things when the MS3 is doing all of these things so well. So for me, it was just, I've just had an incredibly fun time rediscovering the MS3 and just remembering how legitimately fantastic the tones are on that pedal.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I don't want to turn this into boss hour, but obviously, like, we have released lots of, in the 5 years that I've been there, you know, I guess we're probably at like 100 products or something ridiculous since I've been there. It just feels like a crazy amount of stuff. And you know, I try stuff and I play a lot of what we release up until when we release it, and you know, for testing, and I've got a bit of a team now who are doing a lot of testing and product support and customer support and stuff. So I have like less time with the products because I'm like looking at more strategy and you know, all of that sort of stuff. And I was like, I haven't plugged the GT1000 core in properly since probably like late last year, the beginning of this year, and I've had it like sat on my in my pile of pedals for ages. And I was like, oh, I'm going to build it into a big pedal board, because I was like building some boards and messing around with some stuff, and I was like, oh, I really want something that does this sound and this sound. And then I was like, I just had the GT1000 core plugged in to an amp, turned all the amp modeling off, so just using the effects in it. And I was like getting some of the best sounds and like feeling, you know, like responsive, like drive sound stuff. And I was like, this thing's amazing.
And you uploaded a little video of this onto the Facebook group.
So I you know, the good thing, I guess the MS3 is like a multi-effects unit, but it's got three effects loops in it. Where the GT1000 core is more like a full multi-effects processor that does have two external loops, but it does a lot more in terms of, it's got amp modeling in it and it's got more assigns. You can like program it to do a whole bunch of stuff internally. And you can sort of bend it to your will, I guess, depending on what sort of thing you need. And I was like, I'm going to build... It really opens up once you add an extra two button foot switch, so you've got a little, you know, an up and down or however. So I thought I'd put all of it in a Boss BCB30X, which is our tiny pedal board, basically. So that FS7 foot switch. And I just was like, once I started diving into program, I was like, oh, man. Like, there's so much stuff that you can do it in that one little pedal board. Because I was actually, it sort of came a little bit out of wanting to record better guitar sounds for the stuff that we've been talking about on previous podcasts. And I was like, actually, what I'd really like to be able to do, if I'm just going to lay down guide tracks at the moment, because it's still not really set up for doing reamping or anything, I just want to be able to like have a good guitar sound from a pedal that I know and the sounds that I know, rather than trying to use plugins and stuff. So I tried to build like basically the small recording board. And then, yeah, with the extra pedal, I managed to get it set up. So I've got one button that's always a looper, one that always does like an external effect. And then you can go between bank up, bank down, and then like a pedal board mode. So, yeah, two buttons go up and down. And you hit another button and it puts you into pedal board mode. And then you've got two buttons to, you know, control extra external effects. And actually, I realized that most of the time, if I'm just jamming around, I only really need per patch like a couple of switchable sounds.
Right.
Because the amount of times I've like plugged in my big pedal board and then spent about half an hour like dialing everything in and then going, I haven't actually like played anything. So I kind of wanted a small board where I was like playing a little bit more. And yeah, I've kind of just like totally fallen in love with this product like all over again and gone, just at the moment, this is just sort of like all I need.
I love that it fits perfectly into the BCB.
Yeah, that little BCB30X, it's great. So because it's foam and then underneath is some little channels for cables, I've actually got it set up. So power supply goes
I was going to say, you can fit the power supply underneath, right?
Well, the power supply is like an external like mini brick, I guess, that plugs into the wall, like a PSA, a slightly bigger PSA.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
But yeah, the BCB comes with a little daisy chain lead, which you can hide underneath the foam. So daisy chain lead goes into the GT, into the FS7, and then two more little points come out from the other side of the pedal board. It all tucks away inside, but it means that if I'm playing the GT and I'm like, oh, I really want to put like a fuzz or a wah, or I'm testing some other pedal, the power supply is like already there. I can hook stuff up really easily and then just plug it straight into the front of the GT. Oh. So that's quite cool. But I've set it up purely just for using into the front of an amp. I haven't set any patches up with amp modeling yet, but I'm going to do that as a kind of like a phase two, I think, with getting used to doing some recording at home, having sent something set up for more recording at home. Just because I like having the pedal. I guess in a similar way to you, Joe, where you've done stuff before, it's like I prefer having a bit more hand. If I'm going to adjust something, I don't mind diving into the menu or like touching a control. And it's like in plugins, I'm just not getting that vibe. They sound great, but just not giving me the same feeling.
Sure. Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, so, yeah, definitely. It's a taste thing, isn't it? I did find that almost, you know, to the next level back from that. That was another reason for my move back to the MS3, where I reintroduced like a Sansamp preamp and things, because I realized, well, actually, when I'm at a gig and stuff, I need to be able to change stuff quickly. You know, I need, if the room sounds different, I don't need to be diving into menus to change stuff. I appreciate you do have to do that on the GT Core, but you know, that was my reason for going back to the MS3, where I can have a few externals but still reap all the benefits of the built-in effects. I just needed some things that I can change on the fly if the situation requires it. I'm going to try doing this with my GT Core, I think.
Well, I'll tell you what, Joe, what I found really interesting, which is a little feature that I forgot about, which is the, say, for example, you've got your chain and you've got, right, I'm always going to use, you are the same as me, so I'll pick this specific example. I always use a VB2. Love vibrato. Absolute best, right? So yeah. You can set up the depth and the level and all of that and save it as a stomp box, give it a name, Joe's vibrato or whatever, and every patch, rather than trying to dial that same vibrato sound in, you can just recall it as a stomp box. And then if you adjust the level, for example, or the depth, it every patch that has that stomp box in it, it will adjust globally.
Oh, that is nice.
So that's really, I found that really handy for like delay, because I tend to have the same like digital delay sound with a bit of high end rolled off, and then really all I want to adjust is like feedback or level, because I always have a bit of delay in the background. So yeah, I've just saved like a basic stomp box, and then just you adjust it, like it's basically like adjusting it globally. So that's really handy for people who do need to do stuff on the fly where you're using reverbs and, you know, delays or drives, and it just means that you can set like your preferred set of effects, and you don't have to constantly like, oh yeah, I dialed in that great drive sound, like how do I dial it in again? You can just like go and pick the stomp box, and you can do that with all the effects and all the amps as well, which is quite cool.
That is quite nice.
Because I found that there was just like one or two amps. If I was going to use amps, there's one or two amp sounds that I'd like. Generally clean, then do everything else with pedals. But you can obviously adjust those a little bit more globally if you want. But I will admit, you do need to deep dive into it a bit more. And, yeah, you know, there isn't anything quite as fun as having a bunch of pedals and, of course, messing around on the fly. But actually, for me at home, just something to plug into real quick, of a daytime or an evening where I can't unbox a big pedal board, or I'm not sat down for like 3 or 4 hours to play, this has just been really, really good.
Yeah,
really, really solid.
Yeah. I think for me, like the difficulty I'll find in trying to move from the MS3 to the GT Core is simply down to like it's the gigging mentality, where I'm like, I don't want to think about this. With the MS3, I have literally my four sounds in front of me, and I don't have to click anything off. I just click them. I have my clean on one, my drive on two, vibrato on three, ring mod on four. And, you know, yeah, I can bank up and I get like my weird f***ing... Ooh, I swore then.
Joe, come on. The gruesome twosome. You have to bring that one out.
Yes, I will indeed. But, you know, I can scroll up and I'll have my weird octave fuzz sound with a bunch of delay on it and all the weird things, you know, for the bank up. But essentially, my main four sounds are clean, drive, vibrato and ring mod, and I can literally just hit those at any point. And that it's that convenience that I'd never want to lose, which I think it would seem like, even if I was upgrading a pedal, even I appreciate the MS3 is almost old hat now, but you know, I I would find it difficult to upgrade to something and then lose that convenience, you know.
Mm. Yeah, I think, I can see that. It's, I don't know. It sometimes, yeah, you just have to sort of experiment a bit more, don't you?
Of course, yeah, yeah.
But exactly. The MS, you are good. You are right. The MS3 is a good little board if you want to integrate both some external effects, but also have some kind of your standard pedals in there. I mean, yeah. I realized that actually I was like, right, I'll limit. One of the problems I always have is like straight off the bat, you know, quite a lot of our products are like, here's 200 presets. I'm like, give me 10. You know, I don't want to scroll past more than 10 patches, basically. And I was like, right, I'm going to create 10 patches. And I struggled once I got to 9. I was like, how many more sounds do I actually need? And I know people out there obviously do have a lot more, of course. But for me, I was like, yeah, once I've got like 10 core sounds, that's enough for me to kind of mess around with 99% of the time. Yeah. I think you're right there. The only thing it does lack is some more weird experimental stuff. But that's why I think if you've got two loops, for me, I would add in something like an SY1, or, you know, there's plenty of other things, there's Meris Enzo or something like that. Something that give you the weird and wonderful side of things. But the GT's given me all the drives and the majority of the modulations that I need.
Yeah.
A much more stripped back rig, but I've kind of enjoyed that.
I really enjoyed your little video. I thought you got the most a surprising amount out of the pedal in what looked like a very easy and convenient way to do it.
So I have been toying with Ideal for a while, and I keep saying I'm going to start, and then I keep not doing it. And I sat down, was messing around with a bit more music on Friday. I had Friday off, and I was trying to like record and write songs, and I was like, so much of what I do is like in the moment, and what I really want to do is be able to capture that rather than try and write a song around it. And so I've been toying with this idea of doing like 1 minute pieces of music, basically, or somewhere between like 30 to 60 seconds of music, and it just being like this small snippet in time. So almost you know, sit in front of a synth and have an arpeggiator going and play with some effects and do that for like an hour, but just pull out like a, you know, like a perfect minute of audio, like this captured moment in time. And so much of what I do when I plug in a pedal board or create sounds is just there and in the moment, and it's just like 1 minute. And I keep meaning to do it, and I promise myself I will start, because I read a really interesting interview with the guy who formed Block Party. Kelly, I can't remember his surname, but I love Block Party. The first record was like, the first record came out not long after I got into playing guitar, and it just had some great guitar sounds in it. And his most recent record I was reading is him. It's basically all written and recorded on like a loop pedal. And he's like, wrote the song so he could perform them on a loop, and everything's recorded in like one take and in real time. And I was like, that's just such a cool idea.
That's a great restriction to set on yourself.
Yeah, and I just
see
think
what you can do.
I just think that's where I want to start, like trying to write songs and stuff. I'm like, I need someone who's a bit more of a structured songwriter, to someone like me who's all paintbrush and no canvas. I need someone to actually like go, no, you need to be able to do this, and maybe we should do this, where I'm just like, yeah, here's a load of texture, like go and put it on something. So look out for that. I'm gonna do that. It's gonna be my my thing,
That sounds exciting. Yeah, similarly, and I think I mentioned it briefly last week, but I'm because I've got obsessed with these Snapdragon guitars, these little foldable travel guitars, and of course, you know, we like the Isotope Spire Studio has been a real kind of cornerstone of me sort of convincing myself that I sound good at home, because, you know, it makes everything sound great when you just sort of jam into it quickly. So I've decided to record an EP using just the Spire Studio and a Snapdragon, they're like £250 foldable acoustic, the non-plug-in version. So I'm going to do everything, all the mixing in the app, and I have to obviously get it mastered, but which I will do myself, but I'm going to do an entire EP using just those two things and see how it comes out.
I what I have got access to at the moment, and this, I was like, is this a crazy idea? Maybe you can tell me, Joe. So I've regained access to my binaural microphones. So it's basically a block with two ears on it, and then each ear has got a microphone in it with two XLR outputs. And I was like, well, I can't really mic everything up, and I've got like a limited interface, and I'm doing a bunch of like improv, like ambient stuff or whatever on guitars. Like, maybe I should record it on the binaural microphone. I was like, is that madness? But then I was like, actually, maybe that I should try and do this at the week, try and do this at the on Saturday, because Amy's not around and I'm not sure she'd be 100% interested in doing this. But I thought maybe I could take the Spire. Has the Spire got two XLR inputs or one?
Two.
Maybe I could take...
Check, it's right in front of me.
Two. So maybe I could take the binaural microphone, two XLR leads and the Spire, and then just record the sounds of nature binaurally.
Oh my God.
And then play over the top of it.
It's the best idea. Do that. It's a great idea, Matt. This is why we need
other people to rein us in on the podcast, because we'd start talking about this. But yeah, maybe I'll do that and I'll post some results. Could be quite interesting.
I'm very excited about that. To continue, I do apologize, dear listener, if you wanted to talk about guitars or something. But for now, we're going to continue our discussion about effects pedals, because I wanted to talk about Jackson Audio. Friends of the podcast, Jackson Audio, they were kind enough, obviously, dear listener, if you're listening to the free version of this podcast, you know that they've been they were sponsoring the podcast for like the last month. We got a handful of their pedals. They sent us a few for us to check out, and I recently sent them up to you, Matt Knight, and I think you've had a chance to actually spend some time with the Fuzz.
Yes, the Fuzz and a bit of the Asabi. So let's start with the Asabi, because I think this is quite a cool one to start with. This is the Matthias Asato signature, and is two drive pedals in one, but it also includes their modular format,
which they also have on the Fuzz, right?
That is correct. Yes. So the Asabi is a classic kind of high gain JCM 800 on one side, and then a sort of more kind of classic overdrive on the other side. Both can be used independently, or they can be used together. One goes into the other. They don't run in parallel, they run in series. And that's really where it starts, and then it gets a whole lot of crazy from there on. Not terms of crazy in terms of sound, but just in terms of what you can do. So they are all analog, but digitally controlled, like other pedals out in the market, like Chase Bliss, for example. So what is cool here is, first of all, you can gain cycle. So gain cycling on this particular pedal means that if you tap both of them together, you go between 25%, 50%, 75% or 100% of where you set the gain pedal control. So you can actually...
I love it.
It's such a cool little feature to have, because you can then go, right, well, I'm going to start off with medium gain. You know, you can have one pedal do, you know, the intro, verse, chorus, solo, if you want, which is...
But
which
you
is
can only cool. cycle in a linear fashion,
I You assume. Can only cycle in a linear fashion. But you could start at 50% if you wanted and go up to 75 and then 100 and then double tap it, you know, and you can go back. So that's on there. So that's quite cool. You've got a 3-band EQ, active EQ, which again is very, very good in terms of being able to really tone shape for recording, or, you know, hopefully when people can go out and play gigs. But one thing that's really interesting is they have built in a bunch of different clipping circuits. So clipping really determines how a drive pedal sounds and performs. And different clipping circuits are synonymous with different types of drive. You know, the way a pedal clips tends to dictate how it sounds. And that's the same for all pedals. So, you know, hard clipping or soft clipping or, you know, asymmetrical, symmetrical, all terms that people throw around and then never really understand. And the great thing about this pedal is it kind of helps you understand it a bit more, because each side you can change the clipping circuit. So if you take the standard drive, you can go between a governor, a Marshall governor style, which is two LEDs symmetrically. So you've got more higher headroom, a bit more of an open sound, a bit more like a vintage Marshall. You've then got 808 style, which is two symmetrical silicon diodes. So that gives you more drive and a bit more compression, like a Tube Screamer. Then you've got asymmetric high gain. So it's three diodes, so two silicon and one LED, that clip asymmetrically, which give you a lot more high gain. And then you've got symmetrical high gain, which is four diodes, which will clip the top and bottom portions evenly, which gives you the most direct and focused sound. So that's just one side, and you can do that on both sides. So, you know, this one pedal, I guess, you know, you've got two drives, a distortion and a drive. You can then clip each one of those four different ways, and then you can cycle the gain through four different percentages.
Such an extreme amount of versatility.
Yeah, and I like the fact that it can be MIDI controlled. So that means that you can send CC messages to change, you know, what clipping you want or what drive needs to come on. The only thing it's missing, my only minor criticism, is that you can't save presets. It's got MIDI, but there's no savable presets. That's the only thing I think it's missing. And you can do it through other means. You can say, well, always send this message and it'll always load this drive and this clipping. But I'd like to be able to go, well, I want asymmetrical clipping at 25% gain, and that's one preset, and, you know, switch through it that way. But in terms of versatility, absolutely bonkers. You know, and then the fact that it's modular, that you can swap out the drive circuit.
I thought it was the distortion circuit you swapped out.
So you can take the distortion circuit out. So it starts off as like a JCM 800 kind of classic Marshall. And then you can swap it out for, they've only got one other circuit at the moment. It's called the Large Mouse, which is obviously based on the classic Rat, which is a kind of different type of high gain drive with distortion. But you can still do all the same features. You know, you can gain cycle, you can change the clipping. So you're actually creating some drives that you wouldn't necessarily be able to get, like, out in the wild. I just think it's a crazy versatile pedal. And I think for someone who wants more of that kind of classic rock, classic rock kind of pigeonholes it a bit more. I would say, yeah, sort of more of those classic distortion sounds, you know, sort of like Marshall-y, high gain, stuff that you'd use for, you know, rock or high gain blues. But it cleans up well on the volume control. It sort of does a bit of everything, really. What it doesn't do is the kind of lower gain Klon type stuff.
It's a bit, yeah, full on.
Yeah, I just think you really get your money's worth in terms of what the pedal does, which is amazing. I mean, yeah, priced on their website at the moment at $349. It's not a lot, considering that, you know, some people would consider it expensive for a distortion pedal, but I kind of class it as two distortion pedals in one, and then you've got a huge amount of versatility on top of that. You know, and then put it in hands of someone like Matteo Sassato. It's like, okay, there's just, yeah, a whole realm of stuff that you can do with it. So I think that's really cool, but I have been super impressed as well with their modular fuzz. So this kind of does a similar thing in the fact that you've got the modular circuit. What it doesn't do is the gain cycling or the clipping. This is designed to be a analog fuzz pedal to end all analog fuzz pedals, in the sense that you don't have to keep buying lots of other pedals. You can just buy the module. Now, we have spoke about modular pedals before, and, you know,
they've always been a bit of a gimmick, modular pedals, but I feel like this is actually making it a high-end kind of a very exclusive thing. This is extreme quality.
I think where modular pedals have fallen down before is they expected you to have lots of modules and then swap them out frequently. Oh yeah, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to, you know, and it just like doesn't work. Like people just like a pedal and they plug it in and go, great, sounds good. So what they've done is rather than release six fuzz pedals and gone, this one sounds like this and this one sounds like this, they've gone, here's our fuzz pedal and then here's a bunch of modules that you can buy. So you've got a fuzz circuit and an octave up circuit, like an octaver circuit.
And that is fantastic because they've mimicked some classic fuzzes but introduced the octave as part of it, which wouldn't be something you'd necessarily get with some of those. It's just you're just getting access to supercharged versions of some classic tones.
Yeah, I think that's the way to look at it. It's like the Sabi is like a supercharged version of a bunch of like classic distortion pedals. This is like the same but for fuzz pedals. So it comes shipped with what they call the modern fuzz, which is their kind of take on their fuzz sound. You then get modern fuzz deluxe, which adds in a different type of clipping, which you can set inside. Then you've got the fuzz classic vintage. So the classic fuzz with a smiley face. So it's a little bit lower gain.
And I think that comes shipped with it as well, the Fuzz Classic
Vintage. I think it might do. Yeah, the Fuzz ships with that module included. So you're going between Modern Fuzz and Classic Fuzz. Yeah. Then you can get Fuzz Classic Modern. So it's a higher gain version of the Vintage one. So they say like more higher gain, slightly tighter feeling, because a classic fuzz face is kind of a little bit squidgy and a little bit soft, I guess you would say. Fuzz Page Mark II, which is their kind of classic tone bender. And then the Goat Head, which is the Big Muff Pie Ram's Head. So the classic sort of 60s Big Muff,
best
which I think
fuzz
is cool. Yeah, and what I really like about this is you've got those fuzz pedals in there. Again, that's great. You know, on the front of the pedal, you've got volume, mid-frequency, which I think is really nice to dial in, you know, to be able to really hone in and dial that in. Three-band EQ plus volume, blend, and octave level for the octave. So again, you know, very, very supercharged. But inside, you can also adjust a parametric EQ if you're so inclined. So you can really dive in if you want to. And I believe the Goat Head, also included on this plugin board, are a tone and gain trimmer. So you can even adjust the maximum level of gain. For me, this is a total winner for fuzz. I don't see many people maybe having all six modules and swapping them in and out. You know, it's
not
like
that's what it's there for, really, is it? It's so you can make this your fuzz.
Yeah, exactly. I think the way that most people would go is you know, it ships with the modern fuzz, it ships with the classic fuzz, and then people go, oh, that sounds cool, but I'm always a fan of Big Muff, so I'll buy the Goat Head one at the same time, and then people will just swap it in, and that's where it will live forever.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe if you're in the studio you might do, but I think most people will set and forget, and that's where I'm going with this as well. I've only tried the modern fuzz, which is the one that's in there at the moment, but I'm very
keen.
You haven't
swapped it out yet? Ooh, I'm excited to hear what you think when you finally get around to swapping them out.
The octave was the win for me because I love my Boss FZ2 Hyper Fuzz, which is a Shinai Super Fuzz, which has got the kind of octave up vibe. But I like the idea of having a kind of like a Big Muff Pie on board, but then having the octaver as well. So yeah, really, really cool. And we've still got like two or three other pedals to try as well in that range, which I think is... which is very, very cool. I think we've got the Bloom. Is that the...
Yeah. Well, that's one that I'll actually talk about now, which I really liked. But just, you know, quickly on the modules, I think, you know, the fact that they will be set and forget, I feel like Jackson Audio are aware of that because they've priced the modules so affordably. So I don't feel like you're... It's not a big commitment to buy this fuzz and then buy the module that you know is going to be the tone that you want. You know, it's
$50 is nothing really, is it?
No. Well, not...
It's, yeah. It's, well, it's not nothing, but I mean, in terms of buying another pedal, you know, it's, you know, because the pedal itself is $220, I think. Something $220 like that, from their website. So, you know, that's pretty good going. Plus, you get the extra module and then, you know, $50 for the others. I think that's, you know, that's really good. And some people say, oh, well, I miss the MIDI and stuff like that. But I don't think it needs it. I think the drive pedal needs it because they've given you purposely a lot of different features that would be crazy if you couldn't access them via MIDI, where this is much more of a kind of classic fuzz, I think.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, one of the other pedals, which I'll touch upon briefly, the Bloom, which is their kind of, they call it a comprehensive dynamic engine. Designed to give nice. Guitarists a maximum dynamic tonal control. Basically, what the Bloom is it's offering a compression EQ and then what they call a Bloom, which is, I have no idea what it is, like an overall kind of tonal character to the pedal. But the thing that actually made me more excited was the introduction of the Blossom, which is their, which is just one part of the Bloom. So the Blossom is the optical compressor, so you get kind of the compressor on a mix the compression level, you get a mix control, a master EQ, which is a tilt EQ, so you're cutting your bass as you're boosting your treble and vice versa, and then the overall volume of the pedal. Affordable in comparison to the rest of their pedals in that it's $200, and it's a fantastic optical compressor, like relatively transparent, just a fantastic tone shaping tool, which I found is like these things, again with the Bloom, they've made it super versatile, you know, having all those, the compression, the EQ and the Bloom feature, it's MIDI controllable. It's got a whole bunch of stuff there that it's designed for you to, you know, to use with a MIDI switch and flick between different tones. But I find with compression and EQ, certainly, those tend to be things that I want to be the same. I want to use them to shape that overall tone and then use other things to add and change them. But I want to have a fixed EQ and a fixed compression the whole way through my sound. That's not necessarily what everyone wants to do, but it's what I wanted to do. So the Blossom for me made a lot more sense. And it was kind of in a mini pedal form, but it's still quite chunky and probably the deepest mini pedal I've ever seen. Like, it's quite tall off of the ground, but just, you know, sheer extreme quality. It'd be interesting to see what you think of the Bloom, Matty, because when you get round to it, because it's a fantastic pedal. It was just, you know, a little, almost a little bit more than I needed. The Blossom was everything that I could possibly want out of this pedal. And it's a great sounding transparent compressor. You know, the EQ works really well. And then just being able to have that boost and the mix control between your compression and your clean signal is very, very important, especially for bass. So, yeah, very, very cool. All of the Jackson Audio stuff, we thoroughly recommend checking out, dear listener. It's
Indeed, you do.
It is a rather wonderful bunch of stuff. Now, we don't have much longer left of this episode, so let's talk about some news things. We're going off into the Patreon after that, where we're going to take a whole bunch of questions from the Guitar Nerds group. But I want to talk about this new Q series of guitars from Ibanez. What an interesting and unique thing for Ibanez to move into. I think I'm right in saying, so the Q series, dear listener, if you're not aware, is a completely new shape for Ibanez, and it's a headless guitar. And I think I'm right in saying this is Ibanez's first foray into headless instruments outside of their baseline their headless basses that they introduced last NAMM, I think. But yeah, this is their new guitar series. Pretty comprehensive, like at least three models, I think, in the actual series itself, and a signature model as well.
Yeah, this... So, I had thought they must have done a headless instrument before, but I guess not. I don't really know who we have to thank for this headless explosion, because headless guitars have been around for a long time. It's not a new thing. I feel that maybe Strandberg kind of helped popularize it a little bit in recent times.
This certainly has a Strandberg-esque feel to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does in a way. So I guess for people that aren't looking at a computer right now, it's like their S-shape.
Similar
to their S-shape, but where you've got no headstocks, you've got to put the tuning peg somewhere. They've dug out a C-shape at the bottom. So what you end up with is a kind of almost, I don't know. I don't know how you would describe the body shape. It looks strangely familiar for some reason, and I can't think why. But yeah, basically you've got your tuning pegs at the bottom, so there's a bit of a cutout at the bottom where you would tune, and then like a head, you know, Ibanez headless back
of
the headstock.
It's not fan fretted though.
It's not fan fretted. No. So interestingly,
they do a hand fretted. A fan fretted option in this, but the standard model is not. Yeah,
because the body. The look and the body shape reminds me a little bit of the Ergodyne series from the late 90s, early 2000s. Which was...
It's that sort of sucked sweetness to it, you know?
Yeah, it's very bizarre. What's interesting is it uses a Nahato body. So that's a wood that I am not familiar with.
Pronounced NATO, and that's the
NATO.
That's the mahogany alternative.
Yeah, maybe. So it's a trade name for a wood of number hardwood species within a particular it looks like a particular series. NATO is a reddish wood. Most species are easy to work with and take stain and polish well. It's a tight, straight grain that resembles cherry wood. It's a sustainable resource.
Ah, good.
So that's always good. That's always good to know. Gold frets, Evo gold frets.
Yeah, I know. Some of the features, even the fact that they've added, like, what I find unusual about this is the fact that it does, as you say, have that kind of, like, that rounded nature to the body shape. But on the bulk of the models, this isn't on all of them, but on the bulk of the models, they've included a scratch plate as well that's an HSS format, although there is a SSS and SSS and two humbuckers as well. But just going for a plate on a modern guitar like this just seems like a really unusual choice.
Yeah. I must admit, the one thing that strikes me as weird, but I can see why they've done it, is two strap buttons at the base, because they're depending on where people want the guitar to sit. I think they stick out. They look a bit weird. But what I do like is their alternative switch. So you've got... It's an HSS, so you've got single coil, middle, outer coil of the humbucker, full humbucker. But when you flick the alternative switch on, you then start to get like single coils in series. You know, you're running neck single coil and bridge outer coil. So you're starting to get a range of different sounds, which I think is quite cool. And also looks like their pickups are specifically designed for this guitar, and I'd imagine the reason why is because you probably, where you've cut quite a lot out of the guitar for the tuning machine heads, you've perhaps had to compensate maybe a loss in sound in some ways. You know, you might lose a bit of sustain or oomph. So they've kind of done that. You know, custom string lock, obviously quite a lot of custom hardware because it's headless. I'd imagine they're pretty lightweight. And then that leads into the signature. So it's the signature model of the well-known Instagram player whose name I cannot pronounce.
Isn't it Ichikanito?
Is that Ichikanito? Is that how you pronounce it? Yeah, Ichikanito.
I think so.
Who is a master at creating one-minute pieces of fantastic twiddly math rock guitar music. It's sort of amazing how math has evolved into this in some ways, Joe.
Instagram music, that's what it is.
Well, it's you know, if you take like what American football and, you know, like all of their like strange tunings and that sort of era. And then it sort of evolved into like modern day, like virtuoso guitar playing. This guy is clearly one of those people, you know, just insane guitar. I mean, also very strange guitar tone. I'm not saying it's bad. That's, you know, up to you to decide. But it's very, very basic in the sense that they use effects, post effects, much more creatively. And it's more about just the sound of guitar. And yeah, they've created his own signature, which is that model. But it's three single coils in a kind of pearl white. Again, very interesting. Same body, roasted bird's eye fretboard. Looks like custom pickups specifically for him, custom switching for him. Yeah, three-piece roasted maple Babinga neck. Very, very cool.
If you were looking for something weird and modern, the fact that the standard Q54 model comes in like a cool seafoam green or a black, I kind of think they're hitting both demographics there, like, you know, sort of metal colours or, you know, hipster colours. Like, there's both things covered. The roasted maple neck is a big win. A decent pickup selection. This hybrid of, like, classic looks and modern looks, that's very kind of in vogue at the moment. And the fact that they're about £850, so I don't know, what's that going to be?
I was going to say, is that how much? Like,
for the basic Q54, I'm not looking at any of the other models right now, but yeah, £850, so I guess what's that, like sub-1,000 US?
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I do you know what? I thought I'd seen somewhere post, someone had posted like £1,899, and I was like, I'm sure they're not £1,899. But yeah, no, $849 for the Ichikanito signature, which I think is pretty reasonable. I guess these aren't prestige, so they'll probably be like the model down from that.
Yeah, Premier, isn't that?
Something like that. I think that's great. I think nice to make it a bit more accessible as well.
I completely agree. You know, Ibanez, as always, they've always been the first people. I feel like they look at what the boutique market's doing and then they just bring it to, you know, the affordable masses with virtually zero compromise in quality. You know,
I mean, that's Japanese engineering and build for you, I think, because, you know, so there's just no compromise on what they're doing.
Exactly. I mean, they were the first fantastic to do it with bold and poplar tops. They were first to do it with like monorail bridges for bass. They were first to do it even on, when you talk about bass, introducing like Bartolini and Nordstrand to sort of Bartolini on sub £500 models, which was crazy. And then, you know, they've been, you know, the first to maybe not the first to do roasted maple at an affordable level, but certainly the first to introduce fan frets at an affordable level, the first to introduce 9-string guitars at an affordable level, and, you know, obviously more conventionally 8-strings at an affordable level. You know, that even, let's not forget that 7-string bass that's 3 fretless strings and 4 fretted strings, you know, that bass was less than £1,000.
To finish this, I guess, Joe, one thing I would like to give, you know, a task to all those out there. I forgot that Ibanez made a bass 6 at one point, which we did talk about on the podcast many, many, many moons ago. And I found out that obviously it was a terrible failure and sharply discontinued, which is why you can't find them anymore. But the Ibanez SRC6. So if anyone sees one, please let me know because I would be very interested. The SRC6 in walnut flat was, yeah, basically looks like their,
I remember it, yeah,
their bases. I can't remember what
their,
body, the SR,
it's SR bases.
Their SR bases, but this is a E to E bass 6. Very, very cool. I don't know if it was the same, because there's a Mike Mushuk signature as well, which probably would be easier to find. But I think he, yeah, he definitely had a signature Ibanez at one point. Yes, the Triple M1, the Mike Mushuk signature, which I also have a feeling was tuned to some sort of crazy tuning. Yes. And then he moved to PRS, if I remember rightly. Yeah, his Ibanez looks strangely like the SRC6, but it was a through-bodied hardtail. But yeah, SRC6, forgot it existed. Now I want one.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's pretty odd to taste of you. I'm not going to suggest for a second that it looks in any way decent. Oh, but okay.
I don't know. I like the. I for some reason I always liked those old SR basses. And then I just like the idea of this, a six string bass. Bass six basically. Yeah.
Well, there you go. You should definitely try and invest in one. You should get one, Matt. You should get one.
I'll find one.
Yes, you should indeed. But that's all the time we have on this week's episode. So, dear listener, you can, of course, join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds, where, there's an entire extra episode every week. This week, me and Matt have got some great questions from the Facebook group. So we're going to be kind of working our way through those. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. That's it. At the dollar tier, you get this episode ad-free and early. No ads for you. You get it early every week. $5 gets you access to our Patreon special episodes and our entire back catalogue, which is many. And at $10, you get the lot. Plus, I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. You can find us on all your favourite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Bye.
Checking on the Guitar Nerds when you're feeling blue. You're a Telecaster and a Stratocaster fan. You also like weather and outdated music, man. You take one look at a Fender custom shop. You know that that's another $3,000 you're gonna drop. And I love 50s, dude, it's so unique. Now go and buy the plugin from the plugin of the week. Guitar Nerds drumming in your ears. Listen to a spin rat and drink a bunch of beers. We got Mad Guide and J-Box too. Packer even shows up when he's got nothing to do. We got JD and Naomi McCloud. But I am the best on these MCs you come to loud. But we couldn't do this podcast without you. You're everything a podcast host could ever want to do.
John Brown, Holly Simpson, Eric Vaughan, John Conway, the Studio Rats, Russell Howard, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen Cloud, Lipton, Simon Skull, Harris, Joe Hubbard, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Eric Emma, Jeffrey Wax, Shane M, Brian Einsler, Jonathan Hafferty, Kevin Bender, Lyndon Marcus, Al Kadawaki, Robert Badawat, Samuel Frost, Stuart Ronson, Christian Lund Hansen, Keith Adams, Eric File, Dallas Henry, Scott Utting, Jack Cutmore, Andy Manley, Simon Milborn, Ken Sayers, Michael McVeigh, Aaron Peters, Sean Arbo, Ernie Cooper, Joe Patek, Blake Wyland, Dave Lee, Nate Nagel, Ross Edwards, John Anglin, Aaron Sherman, James Ball, Ryan McDermott, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, oh yes, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losis, Stephen Borg, Robert Smith, Titopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Rob Nordwick, Scott O'Brien, and Moo Griffin.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.